Welcome to the Deep Dive, your shortcut to staying well informed. If you're into 3D printing, you definitely know about standard PLA, polylactic acid. It's super easy to print with, very forgiving. But our sources, well, they all point to its big weakness, its Achilles heel, really. It's brittle, tends to shatter, you know, rather than bend when you put stress on it.
Yeah, that's the trade-off you get for it being so simple to use. Standard PLA is, well, it's fantastic for quick prototypes, maybe static display pieces.
Right.
But the second you need something functional, like a strong bracket or a durable case, anything that has to take a load or an impact, it often just doesn't hold up.
Exactly. So that's what we're diving into today. We've looked into two specialized types of PLA that try to fix that brittleness, but honestly in completely opposite ways. We're looking at PLA plus sometimes called tough PLA, which is engineered just for mechanical strength. And then there's silk PLA, which kind of sacrifices function entirely for just looking good.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that. Both start from that same basic PLA polymer, right? But the way they're modified to get to those different goals, it's fundamentally different. And understanding that difference, well, it's pretty crucial if you want to actually succeed when you load up that spool.
Right. Let's kick off with the functional one then, PLA plus or tough PLA. This seems like the choice if you want something closer to, say, ABS performance, but maybe without the fumes or needing an enclosure.
Precisely. And what's interesting here is that PLA plus isn't like a totally new plastic. It's more an evolution of standard PLA.
Okay.
Manufacturers get that toughness by adding specific, often proprietary additives into the PLA base. We're talking things like acrylic polymers or different kinds of elastomers.
Hold on. Can we pause there? What exactly is an elastomer doing, like at the molecular level, that makes brittle plastic suddenly tough? Is it just making the layers stick together better?
That's a great question. It's actually a bit more sophisticated than just layer adhesion, although, yeah, that does improve too.
Okay.
Think of standard PLA molecules as kind of short and rigid, easy to snap apart. That's why it shatters.
Right.
Elastomers, though, they have these long chain-like molecules. When you blend those into the PLA, they act almost like shock absorbers.
Ah, okay.
So when stress hits the material, instead of a crack just shooting straight through the rigid PLA structure, that energy gets diverted. It's absorbed by those flexible elastomer chains.
I see.
Which lets the material bend or deform quite a bit before it actually fails.
That makes total sense. You're basically injecting flexibility into that brittle core material.
Yeah.
So the outcome is, well, much better durability.
Absolutely. You're looking at significantly higher impact resistance.
Yeah.
Much better toughness overall if you're printing things like gears or mounting brackets, maybe clips.
Functional parts.
Exactly, functional parts. Yeah. PLA Plus gives you better tensile and flexural strength. It just means the part can handle bigger loads compared to, you know, the standard stuff. And yeah, the layer adhesion is better too, mainly because those additives help things fuse together more effectively. You end up with a print that's stronger, more homogeneous.
But like always, better performance usually costs more. The first trade-off is definitely the price tag.
It's a noticeable jump, yeah. If standard PLA is your baseline cost, PLA Plus is often 50% to maybe even 100% more expensive.
Wow.
And that extra cost really comes down to the expense of developing those special modifiers, sourcing them, and then mixing them properly into the PLA base.
And here's something critical that I think often trips people up. You get all that extra mechanical strength, but the material still has the same low heat resistance as standard PLA.
That's absolutely right. It's still fundamentally PLA underneath it all. The glass transition temperature hasn't really changed much.
So that fancy tough bracket.
Yeah, if you put that expensive tough bracket somewhere, it gets hotter than about 60 degrees Celsius, think, inside a car on a sunny day.
Oh, yeah.
It's still going to soften up and deform, just like regular PLA would. The toughness is purely mechanical. It doesn't help with heat at all.
Okay, so if you decide to go with PLA plus BRA, you can't just hit print using your standard PLA settings. You need to adjust things in the slicer to really get the benefit of those expensive additives you paid for.
You absolutely have to, otherwise you're kind of wasting your money.
Yeah.
PLA Plus often needs a bump in nozzle temperature, maybe 10 to 15 degrees Celsius, higher than standard PLA.
Okay.
That usually puts you somewhere in the 200 to 230 degrees Celsius range. That little bit of extra heat is really important.
Why specifically?
It's needed to properly melt and mix those modifiers, the acrylics or elastomers, and get them to fuse correctly with the PLA in between layers. If your temperature's too low, they don't activate properly, they don't bond well.
Ah,
And you've essentially just printed expensive brittle plastic.
That sounds like a pretty narrow window to hit. Get it wrong by just 5 degrees either way, and you either lose strength or maybe you get too much oozing.
That's the main challenge, yeah. Mm-hmm. Finding that sweet spot where you get maximum activation, maximum layer adhesion. It's why our sources really stress printing a temperature tower, a temp tower.
Right.
For every single new roll or brand of PLA Plus you buy, it's almost non-negotiable.
Okay, for anyone listening who hasn't done one, can you quickly explain what a temp tower is and why it's so critical for these specialty materials?
Sure. A temp tower is basically a calibration print. It's a small model, usually a vertical tower, that's designed to print in different sections.
Right.
And your slicer changes the nozzle temperature automatically for each section. So maybe it starts at 230 degrees C at the bottom and goes down in 5 degree steps towards the top.
Okay.
The goal is then to look at it closely, maybe even try to break the sections apart. You're looking for the temperature that gives you the best layer bonding, the least stringing, the cleanest overhangs, the best overall finish for that specific filament.
So it finds the ideal setting.
Exactly. And since PLA Plus's whole point is toughness derived from those additives fusing properly, the temp tower tells you the precise heat needed to make that happen. You ensure you're actually getting the strength you paid for.
That covers the function side. Let's swing the pendulum way over to the other side now. Pure looks, pure aesthetics, silk PLA. This is for when you only care how light reflects off it, not how much weight it can hold.
Yeah, the engineering goal here is completely flipped on its head.
And this is where it gets really interesting, I think. Silk PLA is also PLA-based, a composite, but that signature shiny, almost satiny surface comes from adding different elastomers, usually TPU, thermoplastic polyurethane, or maybe TPC, dermoplastica polyester.
It's all about the visual effect. It's an optical trick, really, not about making it stronger.
Exactly. When you mix in these specific elastomers, they change how the plastic solidifies as it cools down.
How so?
Well, standard PLA cools with tiny surface imperfections, which scatter light diffusely that gives it its typical matte look. These additives in silk PLA force the surface to cool incredibly smooth, very continuous. That uniform surface reflects light in a much more ordered way, which gives you that really high gloss.
Ah, I see.
And a side benefit is that it helps hide layer lines quite dramatically.
Which is why people love it for decorative things, right?
Yeah.
Vases, maybe jewelry, visual prototypes where the look is just paramount.
Definitely. But chasing that luxurious look comes with a pretty hefty performance penalty.
It really does.
Yeah.
And this is the absolute key thing you need to understand about silk PLA. The very chemicals that make it look so good actually mess with the mechanical structure.
How?
Those added elastomers, the TPU or TPC, they interfere with how well the layers of PLA can actually bond to each other.
Wait, so the finished prints can be even weaker than standard already brittle PLA?
Oh, significantly weaker. Often. Yeah. Silk PLA prints are really prone to delamination.
Delamination, like layers peeling apart.
Exactly. If you dropped a functional part made from silk PLA, it might not just crack. The layers could literally peel away from each other. It is absolutely not suitable for any part that needs to handle stress or tension or impacts.
And it's not just weak. It can be tricky to print, too, right? It has its own set of difficulties.
It's known for being quite temperamental, yeah. Because you've got this mix of PLA and these elastomers. Their flow properties when melted are different.
Okay.
This means silk PLA tends to ooze more out of the nozzle, which leads to more stringing between separate parts of the print.
Okay, hang on. Why is the oozing and stringing worse for silk PLA compared to, say, PLA plus AYA? Is it just the elasticity of the TPU or TPC added?
It's partly that, but it's also a mismatch in viscosity and how they flow when hot. Materials like TPU and TPC are often, well, gooier, stickier when melted compared to the PLA component.
Right.
So when the printer retracts the filament to move somewhere else, that stickier, slower-moving elastomer component is more likely to leave a string or a blob behind.
Makes sense.
And our sources mention that while TPC sometimes gives a maybe deeper, more consistent gloss, TPU variants, which might offer a tiny bit more flexibility in the part, can make stringing way worse and also increase the risk of nozzle clogs.
So calibration gets even trickier. Now, if someone really wants that maximum, almost mirror-like shine from silk PLA, what settings do they need to tweak?
You have to push things, similar to PLA plus MEM, but again, for looks, not strength. For max gloss, you generally need to print hotter, towards the upper end of the recommended range. Think 215 to 230 degrees Celsius, typically.
And if you print cooler,
the finish just looks duller.
Am I sorry?
Kind of defeats the whole purpose of buying silk PLA in the first place.
Okay, so high heat for the shine. What about print speed?
Speed needs to come way down. Our sources strongly suggest keeping it below 50 millimeters per second, maybe even slower.
Why so slow?
It's critical to give that viscous mixed material enough time to slow out, spread evenly, and form that super smooth surface before it cools too much. If you print too fast, you just won't get that high gloss.
And then there's cooling. Usually, we crank up the fan for good overhangs and details, but that's another compromise here.
A really painful one sometimes. You often have to reduce your part cooling fan speed quite a bit, maybe down to 70 or 80%, sometimes even less.
But wouldn't that hurt overhangs?
It can, yes. Strong cooling helps solidify the plastic quickly for clean overhangs, but it also cools the surface too fast. That hinders that smooth flow needed for the gloss. And crucially, too much cooling can actually make the layer adhesion even worse, increasing that risk of delamination we talked about. It's this constant balancing act, looks versus, well, the part actually holding together.
Hey, let's try and connect the dots between these two. They both seem to need higher temperatures, but for totally different reasons.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Modifying PLA just adds complexity no matter what your goal is.
Mm-hmm.
PLA Plus needs more heat for strength.
Mm-hmm.
To get those additives working right.
Mm-hmm.
Silk PLA needs that heat purely for looks, for that shiny surface. Both mean you absolutely have to move beyond your basic default PLA print settings.
And that complexity carries over into post-processing too, right? One handles finishing well, the other, not so much.
Totally different worlds there.
Mm-hmm.
PLA Plus acts kind of like a tougher version of standard PLA. You can sand it, wet sanding often works best. You can use fillers, prime it, paint it. Its toughness helps it survive that handling.
Okay.
Silk PLA is incredibly delicate in that regard. Sanding is a disaster. The moment sandpaper touches it, that glossy surface is gone, irreversibly ruined.
Wow.
Your post-processing options are really limited, maybe carefully trimming off supports or strings, and perhaps using something like cyanoacrylate glue if you need to join parts. That's about it.
Okay, stepping back to the bigger picture, we have to talk about the hitting trade-off.
Mm.
The thing manufacturers don't always shout about, the environmental impact. It seems both PLA Plus and Silk PLA share a pretty significant complication there.
This is a really important point, and one that buyers often miss when they're focused on performance or appearance. Standard PLA, okay, comes from renewable resources, plants, basically. And in theory, it can be industrially composted.
Even if that rarely happens in practice.
Right, even if the infrastructure isn't really there widely. But that potential environmental edge just evaporates the moment you start adding these synthetic modifiers like acrylics or TPU or TPC.
They stop being pure PLA and become these sort of hybrid plastics.
Exactly. Those additives, the acrylic polymers for toughness, the elastomers for gloss, they're synthetic plastics derived from fossil fuels usually. Their presence contaminates both industrial composting systems and standard plastic recycling streams.
So they can't just be recycled with regular PLA or other plastics?
No, they can't be easily separated or processed together. Based on the engineering feedback we reviewed, it means the most likely end-of-life path for PLA Plus and Silk PLA parts is landfill or incineration, which puts their actual environmental footprint much closer to traditional petroleum-based plastics like ADS or PTG.
That's a really stark trade-off for materials often marketed under the eco-friendlier PLA banner. So we've seen how you can take basic PLA and engineer it one way for high impact strength with tough PLA, or completely the other way for visual luxury with silk PLA.
Mm-hmm.
Each fix, whether it's for brittleness or dullness, brings new costs, new complexities in printing, and this pretty significant environmental consequence.
So the takeaway for you, the listener, is that choosing one of these specialized PLAs isn't just about strength versus looks. It's about understanding that modification always means compromise.
Right.
Compromise in your print settings,
yeah.
Needing more careful calibration, and definitely a hidden compromise when it comes to disposal. You're deciding what matters more,
yeah.
Part that can take a knock or one that really catches the eye.
And that leads us nicely into our final provocative thought for you to consider. Given that both PLA Plus and Silk PLA seem to lose that key environmental advantage of pure PLA because of these synthetic additives, does the performance boost from PLA Plus Quinner or the aesthetic boost from Silk PLA actually justify that environmental trade-off, especially when you compare it to maybe just choosing a different type of plastic altogether, like PTG or ABS, which already have established different disposal considerations anyway?
Yeah, something to definitely mull over next time you're looking for something more than standard PLA can offer.
Until next time on The Deep Dive.